This is the Living Homegrown Podcast, episode number 65.
Welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast, where it's all about how to live farm fresh without the farm. To help guide the way to a more flavorful and sustainable lifestyle is your host, national PBS TV producer and canning expert, Teresa Lowe.
Everyone, welcome to the Living Homegrown Podcast. I'm your host, Teresa Lowe, and this podcast is where we talk about living farm fresh without the farm. And that can mean everything from preserving, fermenting, and small space food growing to just taking small steps towards living a more sustainable lifestyle. All the different ways that we can live closer to our food, even if we have no garden space at all. If you want to learn more about any of these topics, or if you want to learn more about my online canning academy, where you can learn to can flavorful food safely and confidently at your own pace, then go to my website, livinghomegrown.com. So today's episode is all about dehydrating food, and it's kind of a basic 101 introduction into the topic. A lot of people have been asking about dehydrating food, and it's a great way to preserve food. It's super easy. In fact, I think it's one of the easiest forms of food preservation. And as we move into the fall months, I usually find myself doing a lot more dehydrating than any other time of the year. And that's probably because I'm harvesting the end of my garden, so I have a lot more food that I'm you know, trying to do something with. So I start dehydrating more as I shift away from canning. I don't can quite so much in the fall. I do most of my canning in the spring and summer months. So I start to do more dehydrating for that reason. But the other reason that I find myself dehydrating a lot of food in the fall is because it's apple season, and we have a ton of apples up at our farmstead up in Northern California, and I have been collecting dehydrators for quite a while up there when I go to garage sales and things like that. So I have a lot of dehydrators, and we dehydrate a lot of our apples. So one of the reasons for that is because apples are just absolutely amazing when they're dried. They taste great, and they still retain all of their fiber and most of their nutritional value. So when you dehydrate a lot of food, when you dehydrate apples or pears or any fruits or meats, you really do retain a lot of the nutrients. Now, you're probably wondering, well, so what kind of things can I dehydrate? Well, you can dehydrate all different kinds of fruit. You can make fruit leather also, and that's where you puree the fruit and then spread it out and make a sheet of the fruit. And you can do mixes of different fruits. And then when you dry it, it stores well. You can take it on hikes. Your kids like to eat it. It's just a chewy, fruity snack. You can also dehydrate all kinds of vegetables. You can make vegetable chips, you know, like carrot chips, much better than potato chips, much healthier. And you can also dehydrate meat, you know, making like beef jerky or turkey jerky, chicken jerky. You can also dehydrate all of your herbs. Now, I talk a lot about hanging your herbs upside down and drying them that way. That's super simple. But if you're trying to get your herbs dried very quickly using a dehydrator or a dehydration method, you can get a lot of herbs dried very quickly. And you can also take a lot of the dehydrated food, and if you get really, really dry them, like do extra drying so that they're very brittle, that's not normally the way that you want to dehydrate. I'll talk about that in a minute. But if you want to really make it extra, extra dry, then you can take that food and turn it into a powder. So I do that with my tomatoes. I dehydrate a lot of my tomatoes, and then I later make a tomato powder with that and use it for flavoring. It's kind of nice. So that's what the topic is for today's episode. I'm just going to keep this like a really introductory level episode and just talk about the basics of dehydrating. And I'll focus on dehydrating apples since we're going into apple season right now, since that's one of the most common things that people like to do when they do dehydrating. But keep in mind as you're listening that all the different basics that I'm talking about, how dehydrating works and what kind of equipment you need, it can be carried over into preserving all the other foods that I just mentioned. So just keep that in mind as I'm talking about apples. I'll just use apples as my example through the whole episode. There's just some small adjustments that you have to make when you're doing different types of food. And I can always go into, you know, specialty items in another episode, like, you know, making fruit leathers and things like that. But for this episode, you're going to learn what dehydrating is and how it works, the advantages, if you have to worry about botulism or things like that. I'll also talk about how dehydrated food tastes different than fresh and why that is. And I'll go in a little bit into the equipment that you need, and I'll go into the steps for dehydrating apples specifically. Okay, so I thought that would be a really great introduction into how dehydrating works. All right, so let's dive right in. So what is dehydrating exactly? Well, it's simply the process of removing the water from the food, whether it's produce or meat. You're removing the water from the food. And this is done by exposing that food to a little bit of heat that causes the water to evaporate, but not enough to actually cook the food. And it also uses air circulation to carry away that moisture as it's being evaporated. So to be really successful at dehydrating, you need both of those elements. You need to have the low heat, and you need to have good air circulation. So what you're doing here is when you remove the water from the food, you're actually deactivating all the enzymes and bacteria that are in that food that can cause spoilage. Now, did you catch that I said you're not killing the bacteria, you're deactivating it? So that's really important to understand. The act of removing the water, it doesn't kill the bacteria and enzyme that causes the food to spoil. What it does is it puts them into this hibernation, just like refrigeration and freezing does. When you refrigerate something, you're not killing the bacteria. You're just putting it into hibernation. It slows way, way down. Well, the same thing happens when you dehydrate food. Now, since you're using low heat and temperature when you are doing dehydrating, then it also, the benefit of that is that you retain a lot of the nutritional value in that food. Now, with the exception of vitamin A and C, which can be lost a little bit during dehydration, most of the other vitamins and minerals are completely retained. That's why a lot of people like to do dehydrating. Now, other advantages of drying food is that it takes up a lot less space when you're storing it. So, you know, you think about it, you're taking all that food, and when you remove the water, it shrinks way down, and then you can store it in a lot less space, which is nice. So you're not filling up your freezer, and you don't have tons of canning jars filling up the space. You can have a lot of food in a very small space when you dehydrate. Also, it's very easy. It's portable. It's very easy to take around. So it's nice for hikes or when you're going on trips, things like that. And it uses a lot less energy than if you're going to freeze or refrigerate something. It uses less energy overall. When you refrigerate or freeze, you may be storing something, especially freezing, you're storing something for 6 months to a year. It uses up a lot of energy. But when you dehydrate, it doesn't take much energy to actually dehydrate at all. And then you're just setting it on the shelf. So it doesn't use up any more energy. So that's why a lot of people like to use it as well. Now, a lot of questions come up about safety with dehydrating. So let me address that right off the bat. One of the other things that makes dehydrating so great is that it is very safe. And the reason is that you don't have to worry about things like botulism when you dehydrate if you're doing everything properly and you have everything clean and you're really drying everything. You're not putting away something before it's fully dried. When you use dehydration, botulism's not an issue because the botulism bacteria actually needs moisture in order to reproduce. So once a food is adequately dried, botulism is not an issue. And that's another reason why people like it so much. So the best practice for when you are doing any kind of dehydrating is to keep everything very clean, just like you do in any kind of cooking. You want to have your hands clean. You want to have your counters clean. You want to have all your utensils clean. But also, you want to make sure that you're not packing away anything that actually still has moisture in it. And you'll know right off the bat if you do, because things will start to get moldy. So when you are doing dehydrating, you want to make sure everything's adequately dried before you pack it away. And I'll go into how you can tell and when further in the episode. I'll talk about that in a second. But that alone, just having everything clean and making sure it's fully dried before you package it up, really, that's all you have to do, and you're very, very safe. Now, another thing that's a best practice is that you always want to use high quality produce. So in other words, it's not a good idea to use something that is immature or over mature in the fruit, or to use something that is, maybe starting to go a little bad or starting to go a little sour, things that are mushy or have bruises or bug problems. Those are not good choices for dehydrating. It's just like when you're doing any kind of cooking, you get the best results when you use produce or other food that is good food. So it's ripe, it's delicious, it's good quality, it's not bruised, it's not soft, it's not mushy, it's not going bad. Dehydrating won't take food and make it better quality. So you have to start with the good stuff to get the good results. All right? Okay. That kind of makes sense, doesn't it? Okay. So the other thing that is kind of interesting about dehydrating food is that you can really have a lot of fun with flavor. And what I mean is that when you dehydrate something like fruit, you'll notice that the flavor intensifies. The fruit is a stronger flavor. You'll notice some of the nuances of that particular fruit more, and that's because it's just more concentrated. The water's been removed, so you have a more concentrated flavor. But beyond that, you can play around with flavors if you go and reconstitute that fruit at a later time or whatever food you're doing. So let's say you have strawberries, for example, and you've dehydrated them and you want to use them in a dessert later. You can rehydrate them, and whatever you soak them in will add flavor as well. Now, you can certainly just soak them in water and reconstitute them and use them in some kind of a recipe, but you can also rehydrate them in a fruit juice or in an alcohol like bourbon or a liqueur or a syrup or even something fun like a balsamic vinegar. So when you're thinking of ways to use some of your dehydrated fruits, especially fruits, later, if you want to, you can reconstitute them in something other than water and have kind of a fun experiment with some flavorings. And that's kind of fun if you're making something like a muffin and you want to throw in some blueberries that maybe have been soaked in grape juice. So they have kind of a fun, different fruity flavoring, and you put that into your blueberry muffins. There's a lot of things you can do. So keep that in mind when you go to use some of these dried fruits and other foods later. You can always play around with how you rehydrate them. So now that I have you interested in dehydrating food, you're probably wondering, okay, so how exactly do I go about doing it? Well, you actually can dehydrate food without any special equipment. You can dehydrate food with the sun, you can just air dehydrate, and you can dehydrate with just your oven. However, I do highly recommend that if you're at all interested in giving this a try, that you at least go out and purchase a small dehydrator, one of the less expensive models, because you'll have such a better success rate. You can dehydrate the other ways, and it does work, and I will have links in the show notes of this episode to methods for using the sun or air drying or using your oven. However, I think that if you're really going to do this and you want to be able to dehydrate food, a large amount of food especially, in a short amount of time and be very, very successful at it, it is absolutely worth making the investment in a dehydrator. And they come in all different price ranges. Now, when I say a dehydrator, I'm talking about an electric dehydrator. So all that is just a simple electrical device. It holds the food on racks and it heats up the inside to a very low temperature while also circulating the air for the evaporation. So it has a heating element and it has a fan. And they usually come and they come in all different shapes and sizes, but they usually have some sort of stacking of the racks and the air circulates between the racks. Now, you can go online and do research of different types of models. They come in any kind of a price range from $35 all the way up to $350. And so you can see that you have a lot of choices. However, I'll give you some of the ones that I like to use. And just so you know, I don't have any affiliation with any of the companies or the dehydrators that I'm going to mention. And anything that I've purchased, I've paid for. I have never been given a dehydrator. So this is not a commercial in any way. But if you want to know which ones I have tried or my friends have tried or what I have seen work very well, these are the dehydrators that are the most popular and that I see work really well. So on the lower end of the price range, there's really two companies that I see most people use. The first is Presto. It's an inexpensive dehydrator. It costs about $35 and it has four trays that stack, but you can buy extra trays and I think you can stack up to about eight trays with a Presto dehydrator. Another lower to middle end dehydrator is Nesco. I know they have very similar names, don't they? Nesco runs about $65 and up. And the trays, I think it starts with five trays and you can stack up to 12 trays. Now, there are other companies and they may be even better than those two. Those are just the two that I'm personally familiar with. But all the dehydrators that I have ever seen all have the same basic principles in that they have a fan or a blower or some way to circulate the air. And they usually have open mesh trays so that the food is sitting on the open mesh and the air is flowing all the way around the food. And it's really nice if they have a dial for the temperature so that you can adjust the temperature up and down. And what makes the more expensive models more expensive is then you start getting into more adjustments and the timer, they sometimes have a timer as well as a dial for temperature. And the timer will either allow the whole unit to actually turn off automatically or it will alert you that it's time to be turned off so that you don't forget. Now, as you move into some of the more expensive units, the Cadillac of all dehydrators, the one dehydrator that preservers dream about having is called the Excalibur. And what is awesome about the Excalibur is that it has all the bells and whistles so that you can really dial in and adjust everything from the humidity to the temperature. And it has every feature imaginable. Now, that's all the benefits, but the downside is that Excaliburs are very expensive. They have lots of different models, but the price ranges from $135 all the way up to like $325 to $350, I think. And the price just depends upon the model. They come in different sizes, how many trays they can hold, and they are actually for large capacity drying. So if you really do think that you are going to be doing a lot of dehydrating, you may eventually want to move into the Excalibur model. I personally have one, but I worked my way up to that. And I absolutely love my Excalibur. It's a real workhorse and it has these large capacity trays that have the mesh, but you can also get these Teflon coated sheets that go on top. And that's really great for fruit leathers or anything that's really sticky that you want to dehydrate. The Excalibur has excellent airflow and you can actually adjust the airflow. So it makes any kind of dehydrating really efficient. If you're doing something that has a lot more moisture, you can make adjustments so that it will actually dry faster than it would in one of the smaller types of dehydrators. However, if that is out of your price range, and it was out of my price range for a long time, then I absolutely recommend going with one of the lower end models. They work great. You just want to keep your eye on it. It just means you have to watch them a little bit more closely, and you don't have all the bells and whistles of the timers and being able to adjust the humidity, things like that. But they still work great. The whole idea of the dehydrator is a really simple concept. It's just the fan and a heating unit, and it doesn't get super hot because you're not cooking the food, you're just drawing out the moisture. So you can actually get a really nice unit that is not very expensive. Now, as for the Teflon-coated sheets that come with the Excalibur that you can get with the Excalibur, a lot of the middle-end dehydrators actually have the same thing. They have Teflon sheets or a plastic sheet that is inside that will allow you to make fruit leathers or anything really sticky, and then you can peel it off. The ones that come inside the Excalibur are Teflon or like a Silpat. And if you're not familiar with what a Silpat is, it is just a Teflon-coated sheet that you can buy. Like if you are making cookies and you can place them on cookie sheets, the Teflon coating just allows things to come off really easily, and it can take the heat inside the oven. Well, the same thing, they can take the heat inside the dehydrator. But I just wanted to make sure that you knew you don't have to have an Excalibur to get a coated sheet that will work for making fruit leather. A lot of the lower end ones do have a plastic sheet or a Teflon sheet that goes inside, so you can make fruit leather in those as well. Okay, so if you're thinking you're going to do this dehydrating thing, you can certainly go out and purchase a low end dehydrator to get started. And again, if you don't want to purchase it and you want to try this, you can certainly try doing oven dehydrating or sun dehydrating. The disadvantages of doing solar dehydrating or something out in the sun is that you have to keep animals and bugs away from what the food that you are trying to dehydrate. That's really the biggest disadvantage of doing it outside. And the disadvantage of doing oven dehydrating is that a lot of the ovens today, the lowest setting that they go to is still a little too hot in order to do dehydrating without cooking the food. That's really the biggest disadvantage to oven dehydrating. If you are absolutely determined that you want to give this a shot trying the oven first, then absolutely you can. Just keep in mind that if your oven doesn't have a setting of 150 to 200, if the lowest setting is 250 degrees, you're going to have a little problem with possibly cooking the food rather than dehydrating. Now, on some models, you can get around that by leaving the door open a little bit on your stove. On my particular model, this won't work because if the door is open, it will just get stuck in the gas coming on and not relighting. So you really have to check out if you can leave the door open on your particular model. Now, if you have an older oven that has a pilot light, well, then you are in business, because having an oven with a pilot light where you can have your food inside there, leave the door open a little bit to let the moisture escape, and just let the heat or the light inside the oven do the dehydrating, that works pretty well. But once you have to turn on the oven, most of the modern ovens will not go below 200 to 250 degrees, and that's just too hot for dehydrating well. Now, that doesn't mean you can't give it a try, but you'll just have to really keep your eye on the food so that you don't end up burning it or cooking it. And you may have to keep turning on and off the oven so that it doesn't get too hot. But I will have a link in the show notes on how to do oven and solar dehydrating. And you can get that at livinghomegrown.com/65. In fact, in the show notes, I will have all the information about everything that I'm talking about here. So if you are in a place where you can't write something down, or you want to come back to this topic, you can always go to the show notes and I will have links for the different dehydrators. I will have the transcript of the whole episode, and I will have links for how to do the other types of dehydrating. Okay? All right. So let's go into now, how would you dehydrate something like apples? Having apple slices are so great because they're like potato chips. They're really addictive, but in a good way. They're a good thing to eat. You still have the fiber, you still have the nutrition, and kids love them. So it's a pretty simple process, and I think you'll find that this is a great entry level into dehydrating, is to start with something simple like apples. So here's what you do. The first step is just to wash the apples that you're going to be dehydrating, because you want them to be clean from dirt and debris and bugs and things like that. And if you're doing this to eat the apples, then you want to core them. And you're probably wondering, why would you not be doing it to eat the apples? Well, in the case of something like apples and other things like persimmons, sometimes people like to dehydrate them and then use them for craft projects. And that's actually something that I do. I like to dehydrate our lady apples and our crab apples because they're tiny and they're cute. And so I will dehydrate them whole with I mean without them being cored, so that you can see the seeds. I will slice them so that you can see the seeds. And then I use them for craft projects. So I use them as labels. I attach them to packages at Christmas time. They're festive. They look cute. And they're very, very easy to do. So if you are going to be drying something like an apple and you want to use it for a craft project, you don't have to core it or take out the seeds. But in this case, you are probably going to be making these apples for eating. So in that case, you want to just core the apple to take out the seeds and the center part of the apple. You also want to leave the skin on because there's a lot of nutritional value in the skin. And then you're going to be slicing these apples very thinly, like 1/8 of an inch thick is optimal. You could go a little bit thicker, but I wouldn't go as thick or even thicker than 1/4 inch, because then it takes a long time to dry. It's a lot harder to dry. So what you're going for is a 1/8 inch thick slice on the apple. Now, you can use a super sharp knife, you can use a mandolin or some other kind of slicing tool if you want to have it really perfectly even. It's great if you're doing a lot of apples to use some kind of a slicing tool, but if you're really good with a knife, you can certainly do it with just a really sharp knife. Now, once the apples are sliced, as you know, they will immediately start to turn brown. And if you don't want to have any additives on your fruit, in other words, you want this to just be just apples with nothing else, then you can go directly to dehydrating those apples. The downside is that even once they're dried and as they dry, they will brown and turn a little bit dark. Now, if that doesn't bother you, it's just the way they look, it doesn't affect how they taste. If that doesn't bother you, then by all means, go ahead and just start drying the apples. However, most people like to do some sort of a treatment on the apples so that they stay very bright and light colored. And especially if you have kids who might not want to eat a brownish apple, you might want to do some sort of a treatment. Now, one of the easiest things to do to retain the color before you dehydrate is to soak the apples in ascorbic acid. Now, ascorbic acid is just vitamin C. That's all it is. It's not the same thing as citric acid, which I've talked about on this show before. Citric acid is used to acidify tomatoes. Ascorbic acid is used to prevent browning. Now, you can buy ascorbic acid, which is vitamin C. You can buy it in a powder form, and it is always available wherever you can buy canning supplies. So a lot of grocery stores carry it. It's very common. And it will say right on the container that it's used to prevent browning. Now, this ascorbic acid powder, what you do is you mix about 1 teaspoon into 2 cups of water. But always check the bottle or the container, because it may have a little bit different formulation, but that's approximately how much you need. So you put it into the water, you stir it, it dissolves, and then as you are slicing the apples, you drop them into this ascorbic acid water mixture, and you let them soak for about 3 to 5 minutes, and then you pull them out. I set them into a colander and let them drain so that they aren't soaking wet, and then you can move on to dehydrating them. Now, if you don't want to use ascorbic acid or you don't have any, there's other things that you can use that will prevent the browning. Some of the common things are lemon juice, pineapple juice, orange juice, or grape juice. And what these all have in common is that they're naturally high in vitamin C. So what they're doing is the same thing as the ascorbic acid, but they're just something that you might actually have on hand if you don't have ascorbic acid. So it's the same thing. You could soak in straight pineapple, orange, or grape juice, and you just place the apples directly into the juice and then for 3 to 5 minutes, and then pull it out and let them drain. Now, as you can imagine, with lemon juice, it will affect the flavor quite a bit because it's so sour. So I don't actually use lemon juice as often. I will use lemon juice if it is for a craft project, but if it is for eating, I don't tend to go for the lemon juice. It works great. It really retains the color, but it does make the apples a little bit more sour or bitter. Pineapple juice and grape juice will not affect the flavor as strongly, other than to make the apples sweet. Okay, so now that your apples have been sliced and they have been soaked to prevent browning, the next step is just to dehydrate them. So you're going to be laying them on your dehydration trays in a single layer, and you want to have a little bit of space, just like a quarter of an inch between. You don't want them touching, so that you have good airflow and good air circulation. And you're going to be placing them on the trays that have a mesh bottom, or have air circulation through, so that the air is touching the bottom as well as the top. You don't want to set them on Teflon trays if you can avoid it, because they won't be able to have air circulation underneath. So you set them on the mesh trays and in a single layer, and then you place them inside your dehydrator. Now, the settings that you want to use on the dehydrator actually depend on which dehydrator you have. Every model is a little bit different. Some actually let you choose maybe between one setting on and off, or between just a few settings. Or if you have something like the Excalibur, you have multiple settings that you can use, and they will tell you exactly, no matter which model you have, they will tell you exactly what setting to use for that particular food for that model. But in general, it usually takes about 6 to 12 hours to dehydrate something like sliced apples. Now, one question people will ask me is, can you add some sort of flavoring to the apples when you go to dehydrate them? And the answer is yes, absolutely, you can. You could add sugar to the apples if you wanted to, but I don't think you really want to. There's no reason to do anything like that. Even if it's for your kids, if you just use a really sweet apple, you don't have to add sugar. The apples, the flavor intensifies because the liquid is being drawn out, so they actually can be very, very sweet. So I don't recommend adding something like sugar. However, you could sprinkle the apples with a little bit of cinnamon if you wanted to before you dehydrate. Just remember that you don't need a lot. A little goes a long way, because it's going to be a concentrated flavor, and you don't want to overpower that flavor with something like cinnamon. So just a tiny sprinkling of cinnamon. You could even just add it to the liquid that you were soaking in, and just a little bit of cinnamon will get on the fruit before you put it into the dehydrator. But for me personally, I like to dehydrate my apples with nothing on them. I just slice them and I put them into the dehydrator. I don't mind the darkening of the color, and I certainly don't ever put anything like sugar onto my apples. So once your fruit is in the dehydrator and it's running, you're going to be checking it over the next 6 to 12 hours. And you want to dry the fruit until it is about to the point of 20% moisture. So in other words, you don't dry it all the way to the point of brittleness. You don't want it to be that when you touch it, it crushes or crumbles into a powder. And there are several reasons for that. The first is that it's not as texturally nice for eating. You go to eat it and it just breaks into a billion pieces. You want it to be slightly pliable. But the second reason is that for storage, if it is bone dry and you have it in a container, it will kind of disintegrate every time you move it or bump it or go to pull it out. It just doesn't end up being as nice to use later for any kind of recipe or to just eat plain. So if you had something that is to the point of brittleness and you go to rehydrate it, it generally just disintegrates. So you always want to stop at about 20% moisture. So in the case of apples, that is still pliable. You can still bend it a little bit, but it is not sticky or moist to the touch. All right. And I think if you've ever experienced buying dried apples or dried apricots, you know what I'm talking about. You can still bend or squish the fruit in half, but if you were to squeeze it, nothing comes out of it. You can't squeeze a drop out of it, but you could bend it in half if you wanted to. And it's like a raisin. The same thing with a raisin. You could take a raisin and bend it in half. It's not brittle, but if you squeeze it, you're not going to get any liquid out of it. That's what you're going for when you're drying your fruit, all right? Now, once they are finished and they are to the point of dryness of what you want, then you turn off the dehydrator and you let them completely cool before you package them up. You don't want to put them into a container when they're still warm, or you're going to get steam or moisture that's still coming out of there that will then be stuck inside the jar and you'll end up getting mold. So you want to make sure that they're completely cooled off so that any last little bit of moisture that is evaporating is finished evaporating. Once it is completely cooled off, then you're going to package up your dried fruit. So you'll take those apples and you can put them inside plastic baggies, or you could put them inside glass jars or some sort of airtight container, and then they can be stored on the shelf. And when you do that, don't forget to label them with what type of apple it was and the date that you dehydrated them. Now, dehydrated foods will last up to a year on the shelf. They start to really darken after about 6 months. I usually try to eat up my dehydrated foods between 6 months to a year. And after that, they start kind of losing their texture. They definitely lose a lot of their nutritional value the longer that they sit on the shelf. So you always want to try to use them up sooner rather than later. And that's a pretty easy thing to do because the dried apple slices are absolutely like potato chips. You can't just eat one. So if you do this, you're going to end up finding that you go through them pretty quickly. And that's it. That's all there is to dehydrating apple slices. It's really just a matter of the time it takes for that moisture to be evaporated out. Now, if you want to learn more about dehydrating and you want a review of what I've covered here, you can go to the show notes for this episode. So just go to livinghomegrown.com/65 and I will have everything right there for you. And that's it for this week. That kind of gives you just a little introduction into what dehydrating is all about. But once you kind of know the basics, there are so many different things that you can do with dehydration. You could make all kinds of meat products and dehydrate that. You can make all kinds of mixed fruit leathers, which my kids always loved to have. And there are all kinds of things you can do with your dehydrated foods, especially fruits. So if you want to learn more, just go to my website and go to the show notes for this episode. So thank you so much for joining me here today. I really appreciate that you took time out of your busy day to listen to this podcast. Until next time, I hope you're able to live just a little bit more local, seasonal, and homegrown. Take care.
That's all for this episode of the Living Homegrown Podcast. Visit livinghomegrown.com to download Teresa's free canning resource guide and find more tips on how to live farm fresh without the farm. Be sure to join Teresa Lowe next time on the Living Homegrown Podcast.